Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast, the post-Georgia election version of the podcast. There are many conservatives today who are not very happy about the way these Senate races turned out. I think it seems to be the consensus, at least from Twitter, that the circus over the wait Trump won in a landslide caucus cost some seats here. Obviously, there's a lot of liberal media bias involved in this. But obviously, there was also a lot of Sturm und Drang among conservatives, like, don't encourage these fraudulent elections by participating in them. How do you think that's going to work out for America? Kind of boggles my mind. I would like to focus today on one of the reasons why Democrats win in these contests, as we always suggest, that there is a lot of liberal media bias and partisanship. The bigger winner today is the Reverend Raphael Warnock, won his race more strongly than Mr. John Ossoff did. Our so-called objective media firmly placed any criticism of Warnock in what we would call the Republicans' pounce category. On November 1st, even before the first election day, the New York Times acknowledged the radical, quote-unquote, social gospel of Warnock. Reporter Richard Fawcett reported that Warnock's mentor was a guy named Dr. James Cohn, the Marxist father of what they call black liberation theology. And Warnock publicly defended another conehead, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, in his sermons proclaiming God damn America and preaching after 9/11 because of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and all the other actions of American so-called imperialism, that 9/11 was America's chickens are coming home to roost. That's kind of the cadence of how it came out. Reverend Warnock was a defender of Reverend Wright right at the hot spot of controversy. In March of 2008, Warnock went on Fox News and said, "We celebrate Reverend Wright in the same way that we celebrate the truth-telling tradition of the black church." You know, a lot of media people, white and black, said these kinds of things, these silly things, about how white people, and particularly white Christians, don't understand the quote-unquote truth-telling in Reverend Wright's church. It's somehow truth to call the USA the US of KKKA. Reverend Wright said the government hid the truth about how they invented the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. And yet, you have these leftists like Michael Eric Dyson, went on NBC at the time, and referenced these so-called inflammatory remarks. Republicans also pounced on Warnock's hot take on Trump. Warnock said, "America needs to repent for its worship of whiteness." Republicans also pounced on Warnock's 2011 sermon where he said nobody can serve God and the military. It seems to me, if that's about violence, Warnock never claimed that nobody can serve two masters, God and Planned Parenthood. But ABC and CBS and NBC and PBS, etc., have shown no interest in these extreme sermons of Warnock. These journalists hate it when white Baptists or Catholics allegedly try the patience of God by supporting Donald Trump. But black ministers can rip the worship of whiteness and how America deserved 9/11, and somehow that never strains this idea of Christian charity. This only underlines media partisanship. Most reporters, I think we know, are not religious people. They're not church-attending people. They're certainly not Bible-thumping people. They see religion as something that can be used to manipulate voters. Christians are good if they're leftists, if they're progressives, if they're on the right side of history. But if ministers are manipulating Christians into voting for conservatives, well, that's an evil abuse of the Bible. We need the separation of church and state, at least with you people on your side. Now, even in the last couple of days, when you can say a lot of early voting had already gone on, the liberal newspapers, the ones who think the truth is more important now than ever and democracy is dying in darkness, were laying it on thick about Warnock, just as they have for weeks now, months now. The New York Times had a front pager on Sunday. They talked about how Warnock, once again, was delivering uncomfortable truths. That means he's a lefty. In the opening of this, it's all about how Reverend Warnock had the state's black attorney general was in his pews at Ebenezer Baptist Church. And he singled him out for the flock. He has said it's his job to be the state's attorney, and that's true, Warnock said. But it's my job to be the state's conscience. So he's the state's conscience in the quotes here. Senator Loeffler was, in the words of the New York Times reporter, a strident Trump loyalist. So if you defend Reverend Wright and think America deserved 9/11, you're not strident. That's not a word we use for you. We save that for the Republicans. They also had this passage where the reporter said, Republicans and Ms. Loeffler's campaign. Notice he didn't say Senator Loeffler's campaign. Why with the Ms. Loeffler? They have used his messages and sermons to try and paint him as a radical. And their claims have often been labeled by fact checkers as misleading. Yeah, here we go again, the so-called independent fact checkers. You know, PolitiFact said it was pants on fire to call John Ossoff a socialist. But Warnock could say Kelly Loeffler's for denying your health care, and they were like, half true. The fact checkers in the last few weeks were blatantly biased in favor of the Democrats in Georgia. And then the New York Times turns it around and say, see, the Republicans have been labeled by fact checkers as misleading. This was really the passage in the New York Times that would set you off. Mr. Warnock is betting that the time is ripe for a black Baptist preacher in robes trimmed with kente cloth, who speaks of police brutality and voter suppression from one of the world's most famous pulpits, right? So here's Warnock. He's at the Ebenezer Baptist Church, which of course used to be the church where Martin Luther King was reverend, and they put that mantle on him all the time. That's part of it. While Warnock has built a resume that piles credential on top of credential, he has not hesitated to share personal experiences like being suspected of shoplifting and having an incarcerated brother. But they went back to this. Republicans have tried to paint him as a dangerous radical, noting his denunciation of white privilege, his defense of black pastors who've criticized the United States, Reverend Wright and others, and his support of abortion rights. Yeah, well, this is again where you're like, which Christian comes out for abortion rights? Well, if you're a Democrat, that apparently is not a problem at all. So there's this huge, inside the paper, there's this huge black and white picture of Warnock's head, and it quotes from a Warnock campaign ad, from his ad where he says, people who have no vision traffic in division. This is one of those things that liberals do that I find supremely annoying. They don't divide people. I'm going to say US of KKKA, but I don't divide people. I'm going to denounce the worship of whiteness, but I'm not interested in dividing people. This is the kind of fraud that liberal media bias enables. Warnock can push black liberation theology in Jeremiah Wright. not a divisive figure. Then on Monday, the Washington Post ran a story. I mean, it was really an advertisement. You know, the New York Times actually had some of the tougher stuff in there about his divorce and about the controversy over his the bullying of children at his church camp. The Washington Post had none of that. So they had this splashy profile in the front of the style section on Monday, and the headline read, in all caps, "A Campaign for Higher Ground." And underneath that, the subhead, "Warnock's identity as a black preacher becomes central to his Senate bid." Inside the paper, on C2, the headline was, "The man is not radical. Pastor leans on faith in Senate bid." Now, this is a bit of a clash with the text box. You know, they put that box that if you're not going to read the whole article, you might read this little italicized box of larger text to get what the story's about. And it had a quote from a white Episcopal minister who had said in the story that faith is not a conservative ideal. Really? The quote in the text box was, "At its heart, Christianity is a progressive movement. It is a radical movement for the health and security and love of neighbor, and I see Reverend Warnock representing that." Then the Washington Post put out a tweet about how Warnock's all about higher ground, the moral high ground. And it has the words, "Winning a Senate seat in Georgia might mean convincing voters that God is on his side." You know, these people make a lot of fuss about how God is not a Republican. I think we should be more along the lines of what Abe Lincoln said, and his concern is not whether God is on our side. His greatest concern is to be on God's side. And look, there are pieces of Christianity on both sides of the partisan divide. As a Christian, I have been called to show mercy and compassion for the poor, for the marginalized, for the immigrant. Hey, maybe even for the unborn child and the child's mother. That doesn't always mean that only government action represents compassion. Likewise, anybody using the Bible to find out what God's side is going to find plenty in there that's in stark opposition to the Democrats. You know, starting with, to me, abortion. And Warnock boasted of being a pro-choice pastor. Liberals are upset that anyone would question Warnock's Christianity. Sam Stein of the Daily Beast, before the first election, tweeted, "Why are Raphael Warnock's faith and sermons fair game for attack, but Amy Coney Barrett's religious views not?" Well, I mean, in case anybody missed it, the news media were explicitly all over Amy Coney Barrett's religious views. They were trying to paint her as some real-life version of The Handmaid's Tale. And yet Warnock was hailed by the secular media as an inheritor of not only Martin Luther King's Baptist Church, which they use words like iconic, but that Warnock was a version of Martin Luther King's causes, all those secular left-wing causes. So somehow Martin Luther King's agenda to just get voting rights for blacks in the 60s, to break down discrimination, sometimes the Warnocks of the world, it seems to be like none of that has ever happened, that the blacks have had zero progress in America up to this date. To us, when I look at what we did at Newsbusters, it wasn't so much how they covered Warnock. There was just so much covering up. You know, we have headlines at Newsbusters like, "Nets hide fact, Democrat Warnock oversaw camp that abused kids for years." Can you imagine if a Republican candidate who was a minister had a church camp with bullying in it? Does anybody want to guess what a delicious story that would be for the liberal media? And then there was this one. "Nets cover up police video of Warnock's domestic dispute. His ex-wife said he ran over her foot." And they just said, you know what? We're not going to even address that. We're not going to ask whether it's true or whether it's false because we just don't want to focus on it. There's so much of that in the news media today. There's no fact-checking when it comes to Democrats, and especially minority Democrats. Fact-checking is troubling because you're on now. You're on the field where the conservatives want you to discuss. We're in that category of Republicans pounce, and we're just not going to have any of that. So a lot of times what the news media is doing is it's not boldly rushing in to cover things. There's a lot of boldly ignoring stuff that they don't want to cover. So now we turn to Newsbusters video whiz Bill D'Agostino, who at one point worked for, what do they call him now? Bible Boy Marco Rubio. Bible Boy, did you catch that one?
I did catch that one, actually, yeah.
Did they have Bible study sessions there?
Well, we didn't. I was an intern, so we were mostly just answering phone calls from angry Democratic constituents.
the joy. Things you learned.
Yeah, at the time, actually, it was right after Trump had been elected, and so it was all the cabinet nominations that these people were calling about. I remember specifically a lot of people calling from what I presume were like old folks' homes in like Boca Raton and stuff, asking him to say no to Rex Tillerman. That was a big one.
The funniest thing about the Trump years is everything's a blur. When you're like, remember that guy who was Secretary of State for like a year? You know, everybody blurs, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Tom Kelly at HHS for 9 months. I mean, everything kind of whizzes by. We'll get back to the cabinet in a little bit. You had done a video as we sit here today. We're waiting for the whatever on earth is going to happen in the Senate here to certify the Biden result.
Right.
But you guys dug back into the old video archives to show something the media doesn't want you to see now, which is that this has kind of been a routine where Democrats will stand up and say the election of said Republicans illegitimate.
Well, that's right. Yeah, we dug back to the 2004 January 6th protest of the certification. Barbara Boxer was the senator that was refused to certify the results. They had to go back and look at it. It was basically just a protest.
Right.
And the media treated this as not perfectly routine, but perfectly reasonable. There was a lot of crowing about, look, this isn't going to change the result of anything. So why don't, you know, this is an important symbolic gesture. Maybe we need to look at our elections. You had analysts saying things like, you know, we spend more money on prison food in this country than we do on election security.
Yeah.
And all of this was treated as perfectly reasonable and a fair point by the media.
One of the people in your video who shows up repeatedly is a guy named Craig Crawford, mm-hmm. who's one of those, what happened to Craig Crawford? Although, you know, it doesn't mean you refuse, fail to exist. You just don't exist on television. I'm kind of in that category now. Used to do Fox News before Trump.
Well, now you're doing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe he was Keith Olbermann's guest.
Yeah, well, and that'll tell you all you need to know. I mean, yes. So we understand that these people are doing the same thing that the Republicans are basically suggesting they're doing today. And their whole defense would be to say, well, at the time we knew it was pro forma. It was a performance. It was a protest. And so then they would say, well, we're all liberal Democrats or leftists, and so we're going to say, wasn't that a wonderful protest today? Again, for people who are young, I will tell you that, yes, they very much treated George W. Bush in 2001 as not legitimately elected.
Absolutely.
The Maxine Waters crowd wouldn't go to the inauguration. The Pacifica Radio, taxpayer-funded Pacifica Radio, still exists, still a raving bed of lunacy. But they love to call Bush the president select. So this does happen on the left. I mean, I think that the difference, I guess, here is that they presume that this whole thing is not a protest. It's a dead serious attempt to say the Electoral College has to be reversed.
That's right. They have to infer all of the worst intentions when it's the side that they don't like doing it. And by the way, just as a side note, there were Democrats in Congress back in 2004 saying that no, the results in Ohio were very much still in dispute. It was the standard Democratic line, which was voter suppression and all that.
Yeah.
You know, there were lines at the voting booths, therefore, Kerry won or something. But yeah, and of course, you know, the media kind of downplayed that because they knew that wasn't really a good look. And so they were the ones mostly responsible for the "this is just a protest" line.
Yeah.
I mean, but if you were to look at Nancy Pelosi's reaction to the whole thing back then,
yeah,
there's a reason that she was averse to it. And it's because it was a little bit more than just a protest.
Yeah, well, and I think that it is legitimate to say, as we certainly have said here at Newsbusters, that the media coverage, and I mean, this is true in almost every presidential election, the media coverage and the media omissions amount to voter suppression. You know, they're always trying to discourage Republicans that you should be disgusted at this Trump, you should not vote for him, you should not go vote because he's disgusting.
And the omission, yeah.
He's not helping his case here. I mean, I think this is a mess. Like the first debate was a mess. And you can obviously look at the results of the Georgia races and say, well, what would have happened if he hadn't thrown this kind of a mess? But I mean, again, our case at Newsbusters is to say, you can say there's voter, you can claim there's voter suppression. It's another question of whether the vote counting is accurate. We have a news media that for years now gets very upset at the idea that voter fraud exists. They're not even willing to admit it exists. Now, of course, the phrase in this season was, there's no proof of widespread voter fraud. I don't personally believe that there's enough voter fraud that would overturn this election. But they, for many years now, have tried to suggest not only is there no voter fraud, but there's voter suppression everywhere. You're not supposed to be a sore loser and say that you really won when you lost, but we all love Stacey Abrams.
And it's sort of ridiculous and a little off-putting to hear people insisting so vehemently that there is no voter fraud ever, and that it never exists. And also we need to expand voting capabilities for everybody. We need to ban voter ID laws because they're racist. You know, it's like all of these things trend in one direction,
yep.
Right? And so if then to top it all off, you have, you know, John Berman sitting there sternly reminding you that there's no such thing as voter fraud ever, it feels a little weird.
Yeah.
You know? And so I wish that there were more, I guess, more credence given to the idea, even in small amounts, that there is such a thing as voter fraud. You know, like I think that the reason this has become so politically charged and partisan and kind of ugly in a lot of ways is because of the adamance on the left that there's none of it whatsoever at all. And that's clearly not the case.
Yeah. I mean, here in the field of media research, we're very careful when we want to say that there has been no story on a subject. We're going to check it, double check it, and probably triple check it to make sure that there was no story. I was doing this story on Warnock and Kelly Loeffler yesterday, and I said Kelly Loeffler was only mentioned in one paragraph, and then I reread it and discovered she was mentioned in two paragraphs. So I didn't write it that way. But I mean, whenever you make a categorical statement, whether you're a journalist, whether you're a politician, whether you're a media researcher, it's probably generally a mess to say there's absolutely zero. That's just a much higher standard of evidence than saying voter fraud is not large enough to matter.
Right. And it's the phrasing of it too.
Yeah.
You know, because they say there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud, which is a very peculiar way to phrase it. A better way would be there is not much evidence, or there's not widespread evidence of voter fraud.
Yeah, I mean, some of that you would say, well, okay, at least that's more carefully stated. And I think a lot of the things that
But it comes off as weaselly, you know, as kind of
legalistic.
A CYA sort of thing, as opposed to, you know, the best way to convey the truth to your audience.
Well, if you have followed Bill's videos and he and Rich Noyes have been working on it, a lot of times we end up focusing on verbiage.
Yes.
Just like you look at Hunter Biden and the way they all said, this has all the earmarks of Russian disinformation, and you'll just show, here's 27 times they all said that. You know, there was no actual evidence of Russian disinformation. It just had the markings that it looked like Russian disinformation. And yeah, what you prove when you do a series of those is, yeah, they're just kind of a script of talking points. And all the networks use them. There's no competition. They all speak of one mind, and they all use the same words.
And it's not aimed at conveying the truth or conveying information. It's aimed at setting a narrative. And I think that the repetition kind of pieces that we do are one of the best ways to highlight that, because it shows that there's kind of a goal behind it other than just reporting.
Yeah, that's where, pretty much everybody says now, you know, that's not the nightly news, it's the nightly narrative. It's not news, it's advertising. It's not journalism, it's just messaging. And that's kind of what we do. Now, I'll return back to then, what you said you were working on is we're in that phase where there's still some Biden picks that have not been made for the cabinet. But boy, they seem to like just about everybody Biden has selected.
Yeah, and their main focal point in covering cabinet picks is, they might as well have a diversity scoreboard going at this point.
Right.
With little tally marks on the back. Have Steve Kornacki analyze that for us.
But it goes back to James Watt, for the old people in the audience. James Watt, the Interior Secretary under Reagan, basically got fired for suggesting he had this ideal panel with, a black, two Jews, and a cripple. Something of that nature.
Right.
It was very insensitively stated. He was trying to speak of diversity and said it wrong. But you're sitting here now and you're still saying, well, Biden hasn't done one thing that he said he was going to do. There's no Republican yet. There's not even an MSNBC Republican yet. I noticed that when William Cohen was on yesterday inveighing against Trump.
Although, to be fair, I'm not sure we need an MSNBC Republican in the cabinet.
I'm saying that's the way that's their cover for.
Oh, I know.
Oh, we named a Republican.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Obviously, they've tried. They have tried very hard to say we're ticking all the boxes, and yet, yes, there's not enough of a focus. And we've said this many times now in recent weeks. There's no focus on the ideology or the qualifications of these nominees. It's all, it's the first blank to be blank.
Right, and. Part of that is the standard identity politics garbage that we're all so used to at this point. But part of it also, I think, is kind of a power grab sort of move, where if you say, well, look, the diversity that matters is not necessarily the diversity of thought. It's diversity of, ethnicities and whatever. And you can get, just a slew of people who share your agenda and ideology and just pick, this guy with this skin color for this role, this guy with this skin color for this role, this one, and suddenly you've got an army of people pretty much uniform of thought working on, in the same cabinet.
Yeah.
And you get to get away with calling that diverse because everybody looks different.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that is the interesting thing, too. One of the things we'll be looking at in the years to come is, yes, how much actual difference of opinion within the Democratic Party. But we will expect that the news media will try to paper over most of the differences among the Democrats. Certainly, feuding among the Democrats is not something they're tremendously interested in. They love trying to create fratricide in the grand old party, but they're always trying to suppress it with the Democrats. So, well, we will look forward to that.
That'll be a fun one.
I think that we will get a little more on the confirmation on the ideology and the policy positions of these nominees as they come before the Senate. But as it looks right now, the Senate committee chairman will be a Democrat. So it'll look different than a confirmation hearing might have looked as we perceived it a week or two ago.
Right.
Thanks for joining us. Come join us next week. In the meantime, come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.